Welcome to Under the Dome, the State Journal Register podcast about Illinois government and politics. I'm editor Angie Muse, and I'm here with political writer Bernie Schoenberg and State House reporter Doug Finke. Doug, big topic at the State House this week was sort of a deja vu. The Equal Rights Amendment is new again.
Deja vu and deja vu and deja vu, because this has been around for years, and the Equal Rights Amendment has passed both the House and the Senate at various times over the years, but never both chambers at the same time. So there obviously is a renewed emphasis on women's rights, and with the whole Me Too, with the harassment issues that are going around. So there was another move this year to get it the Illinois to ratify it. It was done in the Senate first, and it got strong bipartisan support. There was shortly before the vote, the newly formed Women's Caucus, Women's Senate Caucus, had a news conference which they announced that they were for passing Equal Rights Amendment. There's only one female member of the Senate who voted against it in the end. The question now is whether, even if the House follows suit and adopts it, whether it's going to have any real meaning, because the deadline that Congress set for ratification of this amendment lapsed 30-some years ago. The supporters of this thing hope that if they get the necessary 38 states to ratify it, that they can still do the procedures to get it added to the Constitution, but that remains to be seen.
Where has the Governor Rauner expressed a view on what position he might take?
He said he's for, certainly for women's rights. As I understand the process, this is not something that would go to his desk for his signature, but he did express support for the concept of the amendment. He didn't really indicate that he would lobby members of the House one way or another on it, but didn't throw any cold water on the idea immediately either.
But some of the opponents, Bernie, you were telling me this morning, are lobbying the governor to, as you said, Doug, throw cold water on it.
Well, I can't actually remember who, but I think it was a legislator who might have said that this would be a good way for the governor to show that he is still, you know, with the conservative movement to be opposed to it. There's a group out there named Illinois Family Institute, very conservative on social issues, very pro-life on abortion, traditional marriage, that kind of thing. Actually, they were so strong on social issues that the governor says are not part of his emphasis, but because they're mad at things he did, their political action committee actually endorsed Jeannie Ives, the very conservative legislator from Wheaton, in the primary. So there is still some movement out there against the Equal Rights Amendment, saying that, you know, there are claims, and I'm sure that there are back and forth claims on this. You know, it would mean abortion on demand for everyone, and women wouldn't have any special place in any laws. So, on the other hand, a lot has moved on since then. One of the chief opponent of Equal Rights Amendment, when what we thought was the deadline in 1982 happened, was Phyllis Schlafly, who was then of Alton, later moved to the St. Louis area, passed away just in the last couple of years. But she was very strongly opposed to the Equal Rights Amendment and would lead in that crazy summer of 1982, women dressed in red with the Stop ERA signs every day of session. And then there were women dressed in green who would show up, who were with the National Organization for Women and other groups for ERA.
And you were there for that crazy
summer. And I was there for that. It was my first full year in Springfield with another newspaper, the Bloomington Pantograph, had moved me down full-time just January of 82, and 82 was just completely crazy. This included, I think it was nine women or so, joined by Dick Gregory for a while, fasting for 37 days in the rotunda for ERA. It included women from a group called the Grassroots Group of Second Class Citizens chaining themselves to the brass rail right outside the door of the Senate for about 3 days, until then Secretary of State Jim Edgar sent police with bolt cutters and in the middle of the night to arrest them. Then a few days later, after they were released on bond, I was actually interviewing the House sponsor of ERA, who was a moderate Republican from Chicago in the era of three-member House districts, Susan Catania, right outside the Senate chamber before an expected vote. And right as I was interviewing her, right behind us, women from this group from Champaign-Urbana, the grassroots group, started spraying animal blood all over the floor. They did it in front of the House, the Senate, and the governor's office, got arrested again. It was just a crazy summer, and it didn't pass.
And you caught up with Susan Catania this week, and you'll have more about that in your Sunday column.
She's enthused that perhaps 36 years later this might happen. She says it's time, and while still leaning Republican, she says she's very enthused about Tammy Duckworth being one of Illinois' two United States senators. She was, of course, shot down in a helicopter over Iraq. Tammy Duckworth was. It lost both of her legs in that. And Susan Catania clearly thinks that that is an example showing women can be heroes in the military, as some people kind of warned against back then.
Yeah, wasn't one of the arguments that women could be sent into combat if this thing passed?
And 36 years is a long time. She did sound good, Representative Catania did, and she's actually been she served 10 years in the legislature and ran for lieutenant governor and lost to George Ryan, but beat Don Totten in the Republican primary of 82. So she was out as of 83 because George Ryan became lieutenant governor.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then we started by speaking about deja vu all over again. We had a leader meeting on the budget. Doug, what movement, if any, are you seeing on whether we get a budget this session?
Well, I mean, it's still early in the process for doing budgeting. The lawmakers put this off until the last minute. That's one of the final things they always do, is pass a budget, assuming, of course, that they decide to pass a budget. But the leaders got together, and there was some progress. The Republicans, for a couple of years now, have demanded the Democrats adopt a revenue estimate, or basically set a number that says this is how much we think we can spend next year, and then build the spending plan around that. And the Republicans have tried to make a big deal out of this. Apparently, Speaker Madigan and Senate President Cullerton have now agreed that, okay, we'll set the number. And frankly, the preliminary numbers that have come out from the governor's budget office and the legislature's own forecasters are almost identical, so that shouldn't be a really difficult task to agree on a number. And also, all four caucuses have agreed to appoint people, rank-and-file lawmakers, to a budget negotiating group, which is where the real work will probably come out. You know, they don't hold public meetings, but they'll be holding private sessions and negotiating various aspects of the budget. So, I mean, that was considered progress by both sides, and it sounds small, but, you know, for the early stages, it's significant enough, and at least they didn't end the meeting stomping out the door in anger, as they have been known to do sometimes in the past.
And now the governor's gone to Germany and Poland, so perhaps the legislature will have a full week to work without direct face-to-face argument.
Right. And, you know, technically the deadline is May 31st, but, you know, we've gone past that before, but we'll see what happens this year.
We've gone past that before, but from people I've talked to, there's no desire to do another protracted budget battle, and there's also no clear indication of who gains politically from that. You could imagine if one side or the other thinks that they can get a political advantage by going into extended overtime, that's what they would angle for. But I haven't talked to anybody who really believes that one side or the other gets that kind of advantage. And since it's an election year and people from both parties are up for election, I think there's a sentiment, let's get it done and go out and campaign.
I would agree. It seems like both sides see this as a pretty risky thing to happen if there's no budget.
Well, and I know I think I've probably said in the past, they'll probably fight again. On the other hand, it has been pointed out by others, and it's true that the big lift last year was the need to increase taxes to fill most of the budget hole, even though, there are many, and certainly the governor says the budget is still unbalanced, but they did increase the income tax last year. It took several Republican votes, so the governor keeps saying that was the Democratic Mike Madigan's tax increase, but you had, I think it was 16 Republican members of the House and Senate combined who voted either once or twice to get that done, including those who stayed around, like the 10 in the House that voted for the override, to make sure the state had a budget for the first time in 2 years. So now the individual income rate is up from 3.75 to 5%. I think including the business rates on that, what does that add, Doug, like $4 billion a year or so, or something like that, to what is coming in that otherwise wouldn't be there. So it's pretty clear nobody during this session is going to push to raise taxes in the middle of the session. And so just getting a budget based on the revenue you have coming in will be easier than last year when they had to raise taxes to do it.
Yeah, and it's interesting. The governor laid out three criteria that he wants in this year's budget. He wants a full-year budget, which apparently even the Democrats, who supposedly only want to do a partial budget, are saying, no, we want to do a full-year budget and not have our guy, which they expect Pritzker to be elected, come in and immediately face a budget crisis. The other thing the governor said he wants is for the thing to be balanced. And as we both know, balance is in the eye of the beholder. And the third thing the governor wants is no tax increases this year. Well, congratulations, governor. It's an election year. I think you've already scored a victory on that front, because I don't see anybody with any intent of doing another tax increase this year.
Yeah, tax increases are the kind of things that's easy to boil down onto a campaign ad or a mailer.
And certainly that's there because J.B. Pritzker, Democratic nominee for governor, like all the other, except one, Democrats who ran for governor, said they want a progressive income tax, but that would take, because there's a flat tax provision in the Illinois Constitution, it would take a constitutional amendment. Even Pritzker knows that it would probably not come until the election of 2020 when people could vote on such an amendment, even if it gets the necessary support in the legislature. Can't even say that surely would happen. And he has said there would be some things you could do in the meantime if he were to win to, you know, maybe up the flat tax rate and give more exemptions to low and middle income earners. I've heard some arguments from conservative groups that possibly that could be looked at as, if you're just trying to mess with rates that way through exemptions, in court, you could challenge that as saying that's progressive, unlike our Constitution wants. But it's Americans for Prosperity. There's a lobbyist that mentioned that to me, because in another state, a plan will stop like that at some point. So we'll see what happens. But the governor is running against what Pritzker wants to do in the future. And as Doug said, none of the Democrats this year are going to be pushing a tax increase that we've seen, that I'm aware of, or that will probably get any traction before the election.
Right. But yet there was already discussion this week, Doug, of a kind of preemptive strike about the progressive tax from House Republicans.
Right. The House Republican leader Jim Durkin introduced a resolution opposing the idea of a graduated income tax. It was signed on to by all but one of the other House Republicans. And coincidentally, the person who didn't sign it is Representative David Harris of Arlington Heights, who was one of the people who defected from the Republican caucus last year and voted for the budget. He said that he didn't sign it because something like that, going to a graduated income tax is a monumental policy change, and he wants to make sure he knows what his constituents feel about it before he would sign on to anything like that. Other than that, the House Republican caucus is unified against this idea, and if, at least under the current makeup of the House, if a graduated income tax amendment is going to make it on the ballot, they're going to need some Republican votes to put it there, and if the vote occurred tomorrow, they apparently would not have them.
And of course, Governor Rauner is trying, part of his campaign speech in official and campaign events is that, you know, I want to roll back that tax they passed last year. However, as President Cullerton of the Senate pointed out, he's spending the money that's there in his proposed budget. And even his proposed budget would only roll back a little bit of what was raised last year. What is it, a quarter percent of right. the personal income tax, and that's only if they pass a kind of a pension plan that is very unlikely to pass this year, or even if it does, it might get stuck in court for a while. So
yeah, it's got to pass and be approved by the courts, which is years.
Which makes it very difficult that the $1 billion tax relief the governor says he has proposed would actually happen this year, and in the last year of his first term.
First.
Yeah, so yeah. It's campaign talk, and we'll see what happens.
Speaking of campaign talk, you go to Springfield restaurants, you bump into people you know. That happened this week to the governor.
Yeah, he went to one of his favorite restaurants, and apparently Representative Jeannie Ives, who of course ran against him in the primary, was there with some people dining, and the governor, the accounts were that he worked the room. And so basically he came in and was greeting a number of people, and he came to her table and basically said hi, and that's about as far as the agreement goes, because the governor the following day was asked about this, and he said that he and Ives agreed to meet again in the future and try to work out whatever differences they had. Ives' spokeswoman came back and said that was not what they talked about. So,
right. I think she characterized it as a brief hello.
Yeah.
Correct.
So, once again, we have a difference of opinion of what the governor said in a private conversation, which actually wasn't totally private this time. But
kind of makes you wonder if they actually did have this conversation, what would happen, because you suspect that there would be two radically different versions that would leak out about it. And, maybe wouldn't progress things very far along.
Well, I think it certainly gives politics watchers something to chat about. The Democratic Governors Association has been having great fodder with it, clogging our inboxes every day with the running tally of how long that they haven't talked.
Yeah.
And what we know is, Jeannie Ives gave Governor Honor a big scare in the primary. She came within a few points of winning that primary, and she clearly was very offended that he called her Mike Madigan's favorite Republican, because a range of people said that was ludicrous. Governor spent millions of dollars advertising that idea, and at one point she said, I'll vote for him, my husband won't, and maybe I'll endorse him if he spends $1 million running ads saying he lied about me.
And the DGA even did a playlist about this spat, and I have to say, shocking omission, they did not have Not Ready to Make Nice by the Dixie Chicks on there, and that seems to me the crux of the issue.
It's a long campaign season. We'll see where it goes.
Think of the fun we could have for a playlist that sums up an Illinois governor's race from season to season.
It'd have to be a long one.
I'm thinking the Grateful Dead. What a long, strange trip it's been.
I think you're now in charge of this, Angie.
Hey, podcast listeners, reach out. Help us out. Maybe by October, we will have a good playlist to sum up all the craziness. But until then, we'll be back next week with an issue of Under the Dome. You can find us on Google Play, iTunes, or Stitcher. And if you have an Amazon Alexa, you can play us. Say, play Illinois Under the Dome podcast on TuneIn. Thanks, as always, for listening, and we will bring you the latest next week.